the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Julian. This is the Home Plate Podcast with Ryan Port and Calvin Smith. Talking all things baseball in the city of Nashville.
Just a bit outside.
On Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into another edition of the Home Plate Podcast. Ryan Porth, Calvin Smith. It's a Friday, and that means it is time for the Home Plate Podcast. Yet another edition.
It is nigh on hot outside, Ryan. It's feeling good.
It feels like baseball weather outside. You really like this weather?
I love this weather. I'm here in shorts and sandals. It's awesome.
I don't like it.
What?
I don't like Nashville weather for about 4 or 5 months of the calendar year.
You don't like summer? Is that what you're saying?
I don't like 95 degrees and humid. No, I don't.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's...
I like summer because there's a lot of different things you can do, but I don't like doing all those different things in the scorching heat.
Spoken like a true person from Cincinnati.
Absolutely.
Where speaking it's always of, freezing.
Speaking of Cincinnati, I am going to Cincinnati this weekend. Going to
take in the
Reds and Dodgers tomorrow. Yeah. Tyler Mahle against Walker Buehler. The Reds... have won. They won 2 of 3 against the Cubs.
Yep.
They took the series against the Cubs. So that was
starting to play better.
That was exciting. They're playing better. We're going to be joined by Reds backup catcher Kurt Casale.
You might get to see him this weekend.
I know, which would be cool because they're facing Walker Buehler. So that would be a cool Vandy connection there. But Kurt Casale playing well for the Cincinnati Reds. Obviously played his college ball at Vanderbilt, and he was the catcher on the first College World Series team that Vanderbilt had back in 2011. So it'll be fun to catch up with Kurt Casale here in a moment. Speaking of Vandy last night, holy smokes, did you see what happened in Lexington where Vandy goes up 9-0, then they give up 10 unanswered, and then they score 7 unanswered of their own, and they win 16-10. Just a wild, wild game between the Doors and the Cats.
Through a delay, too. That's some perseverance from a squad, because that is not fun to have to sit around and just wait on a game.
I mean, Vandy is just mashing teams. Mashing them. Good. And this is kind of reminiscent to me of what happened back in 07 when they went 54-13. That was the year of David Price and Pedro Alvarez, Ryan Flaherty.
Maybe the best Vandy team ever in terms of just talent on the roster.
Right. I'm not going to put this year's talent up against that one because that one had some marquee draft picks.
Yes.
I mean, J.J. Bleda obviously is going to be a first-round pick.
But he's not going to be number one like David Price.
Exactly. So still, the success and just the depth of this Vanderbilt team is awfully successful. SEC baseball tournament coming up next weekend, the annual tournament on Memorial Day weekend. So hopefully Vandy can pull through and take home the SEC title. And then I'm sure they'll be hosting regionals super regionals and hopefully making their way back to Omaha.
Absolutely. And it's what makes their depth so impressive is how they get ravaged by the draft every year in terms of their recruiting class from high school kids, and they still get kids on campus, guys like Kumar Rocker, who would have been top 15 picks.
Yeah, and they just keep reloading every year. The job that Tim Corbin has done.
And these kids got to get into Vanderbilt. That's what's impressive, is he still finds these guys who can get into Vandy because they don't just let anyone in.
Right. So the job that Tim Corbin has done, nothing short of spectacular over the last decade plus. So speaking of Vandy, former catcher of the Vanderbilt Commodores, Kurt Casale is our guest today, and we are joined by Kurt now here by phone. Kurt, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So before we get to you and the Cincinnati Reds, I do have to bring up Vandy baseball, and they are just crushing it right now. 43-10. How much attention are you paying to Vandy and the job they're doing this season, even though obviously you've been spending all season in the majors?
For sure. I pay pretty close attention to how they're doing. My younger brother Chase, the junior student manager for the baseball team, so it's an easy way for me to keep in touch and make sure I'm following the Commodores, and they're killing it right now. It's I think they're in Lexington right now. They won last night, so they're doing what is expected of them, and we're really proud of them.
Yeah, I mean, last night they led 9-0, and then they trailed 10-9, and then there was a rain delay, and then they came back and won 16-10. So just a wild game there in Lexington.
That is a wild game. It's crazy. I think that same rain delayed our game last night as well.
It did. It did. Before we get to last night and everything going on with the Reds, tomorrow, the Saturday late afternoon game against the Los Angeles Dodgers, Walker Buehler is scheduled to pitch for the Dodgers. Do you have any sort of relationship with Walker, also from Vanderbilt baseball?
Yeah, I do. I never played with him on while I was in school, but I remember him when he was on his official visit when he was being recruited by Vandy, and he spent a little bit of time in Nashville over the off season. So I've got to catch I think one or two bullpens of his leading up into the season, but. He's a very nice guy. Obviously, a really, really talented pitcher, and a slight nightmare to face when he's pitching against me.
Well, yeah, Walker Buehler, definitely one of the rising stars in terms of pitching in Major League Baseball. But let's get to everything going on with the Cincinnati Reds right now. Obviously, you've been playing a lot, kind of splitting time with Tucker Barnhart, and you guys are 5-2 in the last seven games. And it seems like you guys are playing some pretty good baseball, not only in these last seven games, but in the last month or so.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's just crazy to think of what our record or, mindset would be if we didn't just kind of shoot ourselves in the foot with a 1-8 start. But, even when we were on that bad stretch, we felt good about ourselves. We're really, really proud of our pitching staff right now. I think they're tops in the National League in terms of ERA. I think our bullpen is also number one. So those are stats that we can, definitely be proud of and use to, going forward within the season. But we feel good about ourselves. We just we took two or three from the Cubs this past series, which was obviously a great test. And anytime we could beat the Cubs, it's a good thing, especially when they're in first place. But we got Anthony DeSclafani going tonight against the Dodgers, and it's another great test for us, so we're looking forward to it.
Kurt, on Thursday night, you caught Luis Castillo, and this guy has some filthy stuff in his arsenal. He brings the heat. He's got that wicked changeup. What have you seen from him that makes him one of the marquee young pitchers in the game right now?
I think he just got a, cool demeanor about himself. He doesn't seem like he's ever, stressed out or like any situation's too big for him or even too small for him. He just, he's very, very consistent. And then, you mentioned his changeup. His changeup is elite. It's, one of the best I've ever caught. I can only think of a few that even, come close to the spectrum that his is on. But he, he's going out there every single time and really giving us a great chance to win. And, you don't throw the ace word out too often, but he's definitely got, that capability, and I think he's trending towards that for our team, and he's been huge for us.
You mentioned the 1-8 start, and for me, just watching this team from afar and watching almost every single game, it seems like there was some sort of turning point after that series in Pittsburgh. You guys were swept in Pittsburgh, but that Sunday afternoon there was the bench-clearing incident with Yasiel Puig and Derek Dietrich watching the home run, and that kind of ticked off the Pirates, and there was that bases clearing incident. Was that a moment that kind of galvanized this team after that, even though the early season struggles?
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure if that was that was just definitely one moment. I think anytime you can, use a situation like that and benefit from it, you got to take it, grab it and run with it. And I think it was a nice kind of team moment, I guess. Obviously, we're playing baseball, we're not out there to fight people, but when an opportunity presents itself to unite the team, and I think it was Yasiel Puig was the first one out of there, just trying to wring Archer's neck after throwing behind him. It was a big moment, and we're gonna follow that, especially when our biggest guy is the first one out onto the field. We don't have any choice but to follow and stick up for our teammate. But yeah, I haven't really thought about it, but that makes sense. It could have been one of those moments.
Have you guys seen the T-shirt that has, I guess, surfaced from CincyShirts.com of El Guerrero Rojo, of Yasiel Puig taking on, it appears, the entire Pirates team at once?
Yeah, I believe Tucker Barnhart got our whole team the matching Sandlot T-shirts as well. So we all got those in our locker right now, and we keep them hidden for the most part. But you never know when it's going to come back out. Guerrero Rojo, that's good.
That's awesome. The Red Warrior in Spanish.
Warrior,
but between Yasiel Puig and the addition of Derek Dietrich and all the kind of the good. Natured fun that Jesse Winker is having out there. It seems like there's just a different vibe around this Reds team compared to years past.
Yeah, I think it's just something that we stressed early on in spring training that we were going to let everybody be themselves, because if you can't be yourself, then you're not going to play to your highest potential and ultimately not help the team win. So Jesse's got a big personality, Blue's got a big personality, Dietrich's kind of just finding his personality and really, creating some good situations to, lighten the mood, whether it's being a beekeeper or an electrician or what have you. But, those guys have been great for us. They keep our clubhouse loose, and you have to have some level of that because the season's so long and there's so many ups and downs and ebbs and flows that you just need to, you need to remember that we're still playing a game. And, although a lot rides on it, we have to have fun and make it worth our while we're out there, and ultimately that can give our team the best chance to win. So hopefully those guys keep coming up with some new stuff. And I know Puig just dyed his hair blonde, so that's a new thing right now. And it's just I can't wait to see what one of them does next. It's exciting.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen with Puig, and he had the walk-off single Wednesday night, I believe it was. So that was that was cool to see. But with the new vibe, I think a lot of people expected that with the new regime led by new manager David Bell. What's been your first impression of Bell as a manager?
I've been really impressed. For somebody who doesn't have any managerial experience, to my knowledge, he's kind of like how I described Castillo, just like even, like cool, calm, collected, just never up, never down, and that's huge in a manager. Setting the tone from a consistency standpoint. And he's definitely made different moves that I didn't see at the forefront of my head while watching the game or being on the bench or playing or what have you. And I would say the majority of them have worked. I think he's done a really, really good job of using the bullpen. Obviously the bullpen's doing great by themselves, but it also is huge about how they're used. And I think David deserves some credit for that as well. Spotly or timely pinch hitting, unique lineups every single day. I think there's, a point where, consistency is good in that, but every once in a while you need to shake it up. So he's definitely not afraid to try anything different. And, it presents a different challenge to other teams when they face us, because they may not see the same thing over and over, or we might not, develop into any patterns, which is good. I like playing for him. We sometimes forget he's there because he's so quiet, but he's doing a great job.
Does that creativity kind of keep everyone in the clubhouse on their toes?
I guess you could say so. We get the lineup after the game, right before we go to bed, and I could say most people don't know where they're gonna hit the lineup or play, so it's definitely a neat surprise when the lineup comes in. Text message at night. You just never know.
So, and you also mentioned that he's kind of quiet, but there have been some moments this year where he has not been quiet, and he's gone out there and really given the umpire the business. Is that cool to see out of someone like that who's so even keeled, but he's there to have the back of maybe Jesse Winker in the strike zone or your other teammates, and have everyone's back?
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I mean, I had heard some rumors before, before spring training that he was, a quiet guy, but I also heard the rumors that he's not a huge fan of umpires. So he has definitely shown that he is not afraid to go out there and get in someone's face, and whether that's for his own benefit, I don't know, or if it's I'd like to think it's for us, just to fire us up and make sure that everybody knows that he's got our back, and nobody thinks that he doesn't, which is great. But He's like a silent assassin. You just never know when he's gonna blow up. And I joke with him all the time. I go, I can't wait to see you rip into somebody tonight if it presents itself. And he just goes, oh no, I'm not trying to do that. I'm like, okay, we'll see. And he's a cool dude. We appreciate his passion when the time's right.
Kurt, there's been a little drama going on with the Reds after Madison Bumgarner made those comments to Yasiel Puig. And, you know, I'm sure you guys hear that stuff, and Puig is an exciting guy, no doubt. But how does a little smack talk between a player on your team and another guy add some spice to the game and bring new elements to a 162-game season for you?
Some people may say it, you know, it sounds petty, but, you know, it's been a part of our game for years and years and years, and so for us to just not do that anymore, it kind of, you know, defeats the purpose of everything that, you know, the people that came before us did. You know, we're not trying to get into, you know, fist fights and everything, although, you know, you never know when that's going to happen, but there's kind of like a, you know, unwritten, you know, part of the game that, you know, you do this is going to happen, or, you know, we do that, then this is going to happen. It's a cool part of the game, I think. You know, it's all in good fun for the most part. I mean, maybe not Bumgarner and Puig. I don't know really the exact history of those guys. I was happy that he hit a homer off them in San Francisco. But, you know, I think it creates a, you know, interesting narrative for the fan base. And if that's the case, then I'm all for it.
So there's been a lot of buzz around this Reds team with the rookie Nick Senzel out of Tennessee and the Knoxville area. What's impressing you right now with Senzel's game?
Everything. That guy is a bona fide baseball player, and he's really got an amazing future in front of him. He, you know, especially for somebody who's just learning how to play center field, just learn how to do it while in the big leagues is impressive in its own right. But he's got an approach at the plate. He's, you know, he just doesn't ever seem, you know, overmatched, or the game. I think the best compliment any baseball player can give another is that, you know, the game seems slow for him, and he, for somebody with very little experience in the major leagues, he's been nothing short of impressive and definitely an awesome leadoff hitter. You know, I think that was something that we were missing. You know, trying for years, you know, they're trying to get Billy Hamilton to be that leadoff hitter that can get on and steal bases and you know, the pure speed. And when Nick gets on, I mean, it's expected. He's, you know, he's going to try and go. And I don't know how many stolen bases. He's got 5 or 6 already right now. But he's definitely been, you know, a stable force at the top of the lineup. And that's something I think that we missed early on this season. And I think there's no secret as to why our offense is doing better since he came into the lineup. He's an absolute stud.
For someone listening, they may not quite understand the challenge of learning a new position while playing in the major leagues for the first time ever. And this is a kid who was drafted as a third baseman. Then they put him in the minors at second base because of Suarez and the success that he's had at third. And then, you know, with Scooter Jeanette and others in that infield for Cincinnati, they've put him in center field where there's a need, and the kid's never played outfield on a full-time basis, and he's out there making grabs. Just how difficult is that for a player of his age at 23 years old to learn a brand new position while also having the added burden of being in the major leagues for the first time?
I can't even imagine how hard it is. I think it speaks to his you know, inner confidence. He's a pretty quiet dude and reserved, but he, you know, you can see he just kind of like beams confidence off of him, and it's really cool to see. I can't really imagine what it's like to learn a new position because I've only played one. I mean, when I go out to play first base, sometimes it's slightly terrifying, but and it's not, you know, balls are not flying at me at a, you know, 100 miles an hour at first base, and I'm still scared. But he. he's been really, really impressive. I'm super happy he's on our team, and I think everybody in our clubhouse would echo the same message. But I would expect huge, huge things from him in the near future as well.
Last thing on the Reds, what's the number one thing about hitting that you've learned from Joey Votto?
Oh, that's a really, really tough question. I think the thing with Joey is he hasn't really openly give hitting advice. That's not because he's not willing to. He's perfectly willing to. I just think he has, you know, he has such a good understanding of his own swing that he's just so dialed in that way. So I guess if I were to take something from him, it would be I'm doing everything I possibly can in the cage and, you know, pre-work and everything to understand my own swing. Because at the end of the day, you know, I'm my own best hitting coach. You know, our two coaches can give us advice. They can, you know, put us through drills. But at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to go out there and do it. And it's imperative that I understand how I move, what pitches I hit well, and, you know, what type of mindset I need to have when I'm in the box. And those are all things that Joey does really, really well. And, you know, whether he says that or not, that's something that I take away from him and is ultimately, I think, helped me become a more complete hitter.
For you personally, what's been working in Cincinnati that maybe wasn't working as well in Tampa Bay?
I think I'm just going to echo what I just said, kind of. It's being happy with myself, being you know, comfortable with who I am as a person and a player, and just understanding myself and being proud of what I've accomplished in my life and what I continue to do in, you know, the next year, upcoming years, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, family, you know, my wife, and, you know, putting me in a great position to succeed, and basically just saying, like, as the kids say, I guess, YOLO. Like, it's just fun. I'm just having fun and not letting the game become too big, because it's not. I mean, it is as big as you make it. And right now I'm just enjoying the ride and enjoying being a Major League Baseball player and more importantly, a Major League hitter.
That's awesome. Well, we started the interview on Vanderbilt, and I want to close it on Vanderbilt. What did Tim Corbin mean to you in your baseball career?
That's really hard to describe. A lot. I mean, I think he taught me so much more about, you know, being a good person and being prepared and being a good teammate than, you know, any other experience in my life could measure up to. You know, the fact that I get to go and see him in the off season, you know, we still live in Nashville, obviously, and get to work out at Vanderbilt with a bunch of, you know, a bunch of other baseball players and get to see him routinely is something that really can't be, you know, measured. And he keeps bringing it every single day. I mean, he texts me still all the time and make sure I'm doing well. And, you know, we spread the Vanderbilt name, or the Vandy Boys logo, I guess you would say, not only because, you know, we're proud of, you know, where we came from and, you know, where we went to school and the city of Nashville, but it's also a big, you know, pride thing in terms of how proud we are to come, under the tutelage of Tim Corbin. So I don't really know if there's a better way I can describe that. I mean, it means pretty much everything.
I'm sure you could go on for 45 minutes about Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt.
I really could, yeah.
Well, Kurt Casale, our guest here on the Home Plate Podcast, thank you so much for joining us, and continued success up there in Cincinnati.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Good stuff there with Kurt Casale, Reds catcher, former Vanderbilt baseball catcher. And we heard him there, Calvin, talk highly of Nick Senzel. And Nick Senzel so far hitting .250. With a few home runs and really playing well for the Cincinnati Reds, learning the outfield position of center field after coming up as a third baseman in college, second baseman in the minors. And really, Nick Senzel is one of many young players to come up early on this season and make a difference. When you think of guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Hit his first home runs this week.
Hit two of them on the same night. Yep. They were bombs, yes, to center field, too. That was really cool to see. Your boy Austin Riley of the Atlanta Braves. I know we're going to get to him.
Home run in his debut.
Yeah, and then 3-for-3 last night. You know, Austin Riley, we'll get to him in a minute. Pete Alonso of the Mets, Chris Paddock of the Padres, Keston Hira of the Brewers, Brian Reynolds.
Yep.
of the Pirates, formerly of Vanderbilt as well. Colorado calling up Brendan Rodgers, their first-round pick from a few years ago. Just a lot of young, great talent in Major League Baseball. And I think that just, you know, not all of these guys are going to be all-stars for years to come, but just the overall young talent that is being infused into a lot of these teams, I think is impressive. And I think that kind of goes to show you that you can bring up a lot of these young guys at cheaper deals as opposed to going out and signing these free agents that are still out there that are going to cost you millions of dollars.
Especially look at a team like the Brewers. I mean, you know, they kind of haven't had a lot of depth at the middle infield position. That's why they went and got Jonathan Scope last year. And now it's kind of like it really does affect the free agent market. And when we see guys like Dallas Keuchel still there, I mean, why would you go pay him tons of money when, if you're a contending team, you might have one pitching prospect who can come in and at least put production up close to what he can give you?
Absolutely. So speaking of Austin Riley and the Braves, let's get to Around the Horn.
Ender Inciarte went down, which, blessing for the Braves, in my opinion, because that means Austin Riley's here, and we already see what he can do at the bat. But Ender Inciarte has not been hitting well at all this year. He's been pretty abysmal. And Austin Riley will be a defensive liability. He has only played now seven games in the outfield in his career.
I said he was 3-for-3 last night. He was actually 3-for-4, but still an impressive start. Hitting .571 through two games, Austin Riley is playing in left field. I believe he came up in the minors as a third baseman.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, he did.
But also, how about the Braves taking it to the Cardinals each of the last two nights after getting smoked in game one of that three-game series, winning 4-0 and 10-2. Impressive there from Atlanta. But yeah, I mean, when you can take Inciarte out of the lineup, someone who's, I mean, kind of just, I don't want to say wasting space, but he's just kind of a body just there in the lineup, not doing much.
Yep.
And you can put Austin Riley in there and get some power, get some production. Yep. I think that, like you said, that's a blessing where you can get some production.
And then maybe Inciarte becomes even more expendable for what little you can get for him at the trade deadline. And we have an update for our second Around the Horn topic on MLB to Nashville.
We talked last week at length with Willie Donick about the prospect of John Lohr in Music City Baseball going to New York and visiting MLB personnel, including Commissioner Rob Manfred. And that was supposed to happen this week, and it sounds like that's being delayed or postponed, mind you, until later this summer. In a statement, John Lohr said, "Respectful of MLB's public position on expansion, the meeting with Music City Baseball has been postponed until later this summer. During this time, Music City Baseball will continue to lay the foundation for a possible Major League Baseball franchise in Nashville," end quote.
Sounds to me like MLB saw, oh crap, this is out in the media. We're not trying to do anything with this right now. We gotta stop this.
Right.
We'll talk to you, but let's just keep it low key.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like Major League Baseball is ready anytime soon to go down the expansion route.
They aren't.
And if Nashville were to get a team in the next 5 to 8 years, let's say, I think that would be more so relocation than expansion. It doesn't sound like Manfred wants to go down the expansion route for years to come.
We talked about this with Willie Donick last week. You can go listen to that if you want to hear more on MLB to Nashville. And Madison Bumgarner, we talked about, hey, getting a pitcher who can help your team. Madison Bumgarner has been rumored out there because he's good.
He's very good, and Madison Bumgarner in the last year of his deal is likely going to get traded before the July 31st trade deadline because, well, the Giants suck, and they need to get something for Mad Bum because the Giants are about to enter that phase of a franchise where you're going to be kind of in no man's land for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because Mad Bum, who's been great for a long time, isn't quite the same Mad Bum anymore. Buster Posey isn't the same Buster Posey anymore.
Still a Hall of Famer, Buster Posey.
But they haven't surrounded those guys with enough young talent over the last 5 years where they can continue to restock the cupboard. They need to restock the cupboard by trading some guys. Mad Bum is at the top of that list. And ESPN's Buster Olney on ESPN.com this week listed the San Diego Padres as the number one destination point for Madison Bumgarner. That would be crazy to see the Giants trade within division their future Hall of Fame pitcher to the Padres. a division rival.
Well, yeah, and you know, Madison Bumgarner has this no trade list, right? It includes all the good teams out there. The Yankees, the Astros, the Braves, every team who has the arsenal to go get him with prospects. And he's like, no contending team with prospects am I going to go to, because apparently he's happy in San Francisco, I guess, even though they're not winning any games.
I mean, I would be happy living in San Francisco.
Would you?
I wouldn't like the state tax, but
yeah.
I've never been to San Francisco, but it looks like a lovely place outside of 9 p.m. on a weeknight when the Giants are playing and everybody's bundled up inside what is now, I believe, Oracle Park.
The worst winter you ever had is a summer in San Francisco.
I know. Right?
Oh, we talked about this at the beginning of the show. You hate summer.
I hate summer. So I would be fine with San Francisco. Number two on Buster Olney's list for Mad Bum is St. Louis, a team that is on Mad Bum's 8-team no-trade list, but it sounds like Mad Bum might be flexible with that no-trade list. So,
which is kind of weird. Why?
I know.
Okay.
So San Diego, St. Louis, Philadelphia, Houston, and Milwaukee listed as the top five destinations in Buster Olney's mind for Madison Bumgarner before the deadline. He will likely be one of the bigger names traded.
If he's not traded, it's malpractice.
In July. Yeah. I mean, what? Why would the Giants hold on to him? Unless they are sure that they're signing him to a long-term deal, but then
why would you do
why
that?
Why would you sign him to a long-term deal when he's already kind of on that downward trajectory in his career?
Ryan, yesterday you shared with me some good news. And do we need to change your name to Ryan DiMaggio or Joe Porth? Because you have a streak going.
Let's go with Ryan DiMaggio. Now, MLB.com, for I believe the last 14 or 15 years, has had beat the streak, where you have to pick a player for 57 consecutive games to get a hit. And it's obviously not the same player.
Yeah.
You change it around, and you can pick as many as two players per game or per day, and both players have to get a hit for your streak to continue. But you get two games added to your streak if that happens. So I'm at 16. This is the longest streak I've built. I play this every single day, every single year, because it's fun. Yeah. It's like one of those things that you're addicted to once you get rolling.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't had a streak more than 15 since probably 08 or 09. And
wow.
Probably a decade. It is tough, man. You have to get 57 straight games.
I mean, the
longest
probability is so low.
I know. The longest anyone has ever gone is 51. And if you get to 57, you win $5.7 million.
This just makes Joe DiMaggio's streak even more impressive that he did this in real life on his own 57 times.
And you can pick Mike Trout, Christian Yelich, and Nolan Arenado, Mookie Betts, four consecutive days, and there's no guarantee that all four of them will get hits. So I've been riding a pretty good streak here.
Mm-hmm.
I had Christian Yelich yesterday.
And he hit a big one.
He hit two home runs, so my streak is at 16. Over under, in your mind, Calvin, do I get to over 20, or does it die in the next few days?
I have faith in you, and I'm knocking on wood as we speak for you.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to jinx you.
Okay.
But I'm going to take the over on you at 20.
Okay.
But I don't think you'll get much further than 20.
Okay. I don't like the confidence level in that, though.
I'm confident in you. I believe in you, Ryan.
So tonight's picks, I'm going with George Springer.
Free money, people.
Yeah. I'm not George plastering the gifts to the people. George Springer on the road in Boston against Rick Porcello. George Springer is on fire right now. And then Mike Trout at home against Kansas City against Brad Keller.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a matchup you got
to
like.
So what has to happen tonight, both of them have to get a hit.
Yeah.
If one of them does not get a hit, my streak ends. So I am doubling down and saying that both Trout and Springer are going to get hit tonight, and then my streak would go to 18.
If you're betting on anyone right now, I mean, betting on Mike Trout any night is a good idea, and George Springer is on fire.
Plus, some strategy to this. He's on the road, and he's leading off, so he's guaranteed that his team is going to bat for 9 innings, and he's at the leadoff position.
And the Astros are going to get around.
The Astros are on fire. They've won, like, 8 straight games.
Yep.
So he's probably going to get 5 at-bats. I mean, I would say the probability of Springer getting a hit. And then Trout is a monster at home.
Of course.
So those are my guys.
I believe in you, Ryan.
Hopefully by the time we have this podcast next week going into Memorial Day weekend, the streak is still living.
By the end of the summer, if you have $5 million, I'm going to be so proud.
If by the end of the summer I have $5.7 million because I beat the streak, then it's been nice working with you.
Yeah.
I'll just put it that way.
You're just going to buy a press box up in Great American Ballpark and just live there.
Sure. I'll be living there a lot this summer. Tomorrow will be my second trip to Great American Ballpark this season, seeing the Reds face the Dodgers, and then went there opening day, going there, taking my dad up there for Father's Day.
Perfect.
In June. For Reds Rangers, and then I think at least one more trip is on the docket in August.
Are you going to see any other parks?
Going to see the Reds in St. Louis Labor Day weekend.
Nice.
So my goal in life is to see the Reds in all 30 cities.
And how close are you?
I'm six. I've seen okay. six. But I started this goal back in 2014 when I saw the Reds at Fenway.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time okay. I had seen the Reds in a different
ballpark.
How many
years ago was that?
Five. It was 2014. It was May of 2014. Okay. Right around
so
this
20%
time.
So you're 20% of the way there, and you've been doing it for 5 years.
Sure. Yeah.
You're on good. You're on a good path.
See, I saw the Reds at Turner Field, so now okay. I have to see the Reds at SunTrust.
That stinks. Okay.
I know, but that's an easy drive. I'm sure yep. in the next few years I'll be able to make that work. But I've seen the Reds in Fenway, in Houston, Texas, Wrigley, Miller Park, and the last one is escaping Ooh. Me. Oh, and Turner Field.
There you go. Okay.
So six.
So you saw them in a lot of good stadiums, so you got to kind of get the new ones out of the way now.
I know.
So speaking of Turner Field, we yes. have our soundbite from this week.
Yes.
Chipper Jones, a great player at Turner Field. Him and John Shombe up in the ESPN booth for a game, and they were kind of reminiscing on a story when John Shombe was, you know, talking with Chipper before a game. Here it is.
It was pregame, and I was asking you, you were in a stretch, you weren't swinging it great, and you were swinging it the first pitch a lot. And so Dorky Boog, you know, me and my hitting video, said, hey, how come you're swinging the first pitch so much? You don't get a lot of first pitch strikes, was my point. I said, you don't. So why are you doing it if they're not throwing you a lot of strikes? And your point was, because it's probably the only time I'm going to get a fastball. So here's what happened. Tim Stauffer, it splits the plate at 91. Now watch the hitter.
Watch a head shake. Watch a head shake. What are we talking
That's
about?
That's why you're up there and I'm down
that
here.
Was
now
absolutely
zip it.
Beautiful right That's there.
Funny. Now, what you can't see in that video is that Chipper Jones looks up at John Shombe and goes, man, you idiot. Shakes his head and just looks at him like he hates him that he ever had that conversation.
Oh, that was hilarious. Chipper Jones, I think, spent two or three innings in the booth ESPN Wednesday night for Braves Cardinals, and it was awesome. That was probably the biggest highlight of Chipper's visit with John Shombe and David Ross.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really cool to see Chipper kind of in that mode where mm-hmm. he's not in game mode like he was for all those years with yep. the Braves,
mm-hmm.
where he's just kind of kicking back and telling stories. And
yep.
that was really cool.
And it's kind of behind the curtain, too. You know, before the games, you know, the media people and these players, they talk. Sometimes they fight and stuff, but usually these people have pretty good relationships with each other. And you see it there where John Shombe gives Chipper advice and Chipper took it.
Yeah. Well, John Shombe, I'm hoping, can be a guest on the Home Plate podcast here soon. The Cardinals and the Braves play again next weekend, and I know he'll be on the call for Sunday Night Baseball. So hopefully he'll be able to join us next week or later on in the summer. He's always a good one to talk to about all things baseball.
Efforting, and he would be a good one too because he's a funny, quirky guy, to say the least.
He really is. I mean, his nickname is Boog. So.
Yeah.
Well, whenever we get him on, we'll have to have him tell that story. But that's another story for another day. Calvin Smith, great job as always.
We love baseball. We'll keep talking.
Let's enjoy the baseball this weekend and the next week. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Calvin Smith. We will talk to you again next Friday on thegamenashville.com Home Plate Podcast.